Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims hair loss solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your own home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride, minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral, they got spray and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there's no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, no insurance is needed. And one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinkingbros. That's Hims.com/drinkingbros for your personalized hair loss treatment options. Hims.com/drinkingbros. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code BROS. Love this company. Shit, dude. I just took their Sleepy Time gummies the last two nights. It said on the package, hey, dude, you'll be out in 15 minutes. Said on the website, you'll be out in 15 minutes. That is never, ever true. Holy shit, did these take me down. And I got the best sleep of my life the last two nights, man. It's been incredible, dude. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes, like I just told you. And take you to the mood you're looking for. So whether it's that mind magic gummies for deep work or creativity, my wife does the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or they got their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high to pretty much, you know, wherever you need, anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes, and everything ships discreetly right to your door. Mine came in like a shoebox. It was great, but I also ordered a shit ton of these. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. They've got THC products for everyone, and the taste is lights out. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% off your first order.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Matson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com. Use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. It is always a better day on sets when Tim Kennedy is here. Tim, how are you, bud?
Oh, I'm amazing.
He immediately assaulted Giorgio.
Immediately.
It wasn't assaulted. There was a degree of consent there.
A degree of consent, the Tim Kennedy story.
It was like Christmas Day for Giorgio when you came in today. He was giddy, he was ready, and he was ready to give you his best.
Yeah.
And it took about, 45 seconds for you to choke him out, I think?
Yeah, but he first smashed his head against the concrete floor. Mm. And I do want to defend Giorgio that this wasn't me walking through the door being like, hey, let's fight, bro.
I did offer him up.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This but he wanted like a, it. But he also
but
wanted
I didn't
it.
Know any of these things. He just said, come in and beat up Giorgio.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right.
But I imagine this happens to you everywhere you go where it's like, oh, there's Tim Kennedy. Let's try to fucking tackle him.
Let's fight him.
Yeah. Because your dad is here and he seemed like unfazed by it all. He was like, oh, yeah, this happens all the time. Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure he's seen this his whole life.
Yeah.
Is there a camera? Is there a camera on him back there?
You should.
We can put a camera on you.
He's gonna.
There it is. Yeah. That's the psychopath right there.
This is the man that was like, hey, sons, I know. Okay, I'm putting parentheses here because he actually didn't say these things. And then I'll take the parentheses off when he started. There's a yellow Camaro in this parking garage. I need you to sneak inside, take all the information out of the glove box. And this is when he's a narcotics officer and he's using his 8 and 10 year old or 10 and 12 year old sons as little Smurfs because he couldn't get a warrant, you know?
Technically, a child cannot violate someone's Fourth Amendment rights.
Right, right. And like we're all libertarians here, so now I'm like, oh, look at that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, what a jerk. Who would ever do that? My dad. My dad would, that's who.
Did you teach him this? Like, was this like from the womb up where you're like, hey, dude, I'm gonna make you be the hardest person alive, and you don't have a choice in the matter. How does that work?
His mom.
His mom, really? His mom.
Yeah. I mean, if you think any of the stories about me are something, it's all about his mom.
Oh boy.
I mean,
she's tough.
Yeah. Duct tape to chairs.
She did duct tape me to chairs when I went to do my homework.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's his Sears school. That's all that is.
Oh, yeah, no, this is, let's see.
Early Sears.
Second grade.
Yeah. So this is 18 years
before Sears school? Elementary school.
Yeah. For the next 3 years.
That's amazing. We're here talking about your new school today.
Well, yeah.
So no duct tape to chairs.
Nope, that's not going to happen.
For kids whatsoever. Introduce your special friend here today.
All right. Well, we have Alexis Dries to my right. To the camera's left. Mm. Well, some of the cameras.
Yeah.
Alexis is our head of school at Apogee Cedar Park in North Austin. And she's coming from, I feel like I'm mansplaining right now. So where
no,
you,
it's fine.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to do like the, you know, like the hoorah intro and then I'll like hand it off with a softball pitch so she can knock it out of the park.
Well, here's why I asked for you to introduce her is a lot of people have been talking about your school. There's been a lot of articles written about it. She seems surprising of who would be teaching where you're like, oh, well, there's going to be Tim Kennedy. It's going to be somebody coming in here with a hatchet.
Yeah, you thought
something
like,
else. Yeah. And it's like, oh, no, this is a normal lady. Yeah.
Like the principal is Jim McMahon or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're all expecting. Where it was just like, all right, cool. Is this going to be Thug Rose walking in? Knuckles taped up of like, yeah, bring your kids in here. We're going to have some school. But you seem like a very upstanding lady who's probably taught for many, many years and we're all a bunch of idiots.
You're not a bunch of idiots. It's very exciting to see you excited about education. Yes, I've been involved over 20 years. I've been with private institutions for about 6. You know, I've done everything from be the perfect, you know, student, well-rounded to the school dropout. And now, you know, I'm very interested in finding greatness, like helping these young heroes and these young kids find greatness.
Yeah, because again, you know, like I said a couple minutes ago, with Tim, there is a certain expectation of, all right, great. It's a bunch of cavemen who are going to be rolling around.
We're going
to teach them
how
to make fire.
We are going to do that.
Yeah.
So like, and it's actually kind of planned in this like weekly, we're bringing in from survivalists to CAG sergeant majors to, you know, corporate pilots flying for Delta. And so we'll have legit professionals, executives from, you know, $100 million companies coming to talk, but
the not balance, like a business school teacher that's never owned their own business.
Yeah. Like every business school teacher, like, oh, I got my MBA. I'm like, yeah, who is your teacher? What did he, oh no. Okay. Nice talk. but there has to be, I think, balance in when it comes to these heroes and being able to, they're so smart, and it's the most horrific thing to see what has happened in regular education, where it's been so diluted and dumbed down because they think the kids are dumb. Mm-hmm. Our kids are not dumb.
No, and it keeps getting worse.
Yeah.
Because I have two kids. And so when you guys were going to come in today, I was excited to talk to you about it because everything that's going on, I'm currently involved in with the school boards and everything else. And it is a fucking nightmare. I apologize for cursing, but it is a fucking nightmare out there.
You don't really need to apologize for swearing in front of someone that has to spend time around Tim Kennedy.
I'm not that bad around her.
Like, I was going to say, I haven't heard him swear around her. Yeah.
She has like six, like a half a fire team. You have five sons.
I have four sons four and a sons husband. So and a five. Husband. Yeah.
And from four.
Yeah, three up to 10.
Yeah.
You're close. That's good.
And they're all like total little. You can see why she has to run a Socratic school.
Mm. Yeah.
And so the energy that she brings, not just from a mom, but from these schools, the commonplace of chaos and anarchy is every day. And mm-hmm. being able to direct that in a productive way. And that's where everyone else is failing and where we know that we can succeed is like, I'm not going to say I'm born of chaos, but like the place that I'm the most comfortable is chaos.
Right.
And arguably there's nothing more chaotic. And man, fighting in war and walking to the UFC, there's some chaos there. There's nothing like what she has to do when she walks into some of these schools. And Socratic schools are different. You know, the studios and guides, it's not like a traditional school that hampers and limits what can happen in this learner-driven environment. The students, the heroes in the classrooms are the one leading what's happening in there. And then you have a guy that's kind of directing how crazy things are going to be. So that person has to be a master of chaos. Mm. So I poached her from the largest Socratic school in the nation. And we have a mutual friend, my business partner, Matt Bordeaux. We run an online young men's mentorship program called mm-hmm. Apogee Strong. So our school is Apogee, Apogee City Park. So that was the initial connection, was my friend Matt. And from that point on, I was just like, how can I get you to come to Texas? And here we are.
Was she in California?
She was.
Yes. There it is. That's the answer. That was easy. Come on down. You live in California. How'd you like to come to Texas? Great.
We'll see you soon. One phone call. Want to come out here? Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
For the audience, by the way, who might not be familiar with the Socratic school, mm-hmm. can you explain that to them?
Absolutely.
Because it is relatively new-ish.
Named after Dave Socrates.
nope. But it's a relatively new version of school.
Mm. It is.
And a lot of people are looking for an alternative version of school, especially mm-hmm. with everything that's going on, in particular in the last 4 years in this country.
Mm. Yep.
Explain what it is to the audience and why it's different than a regular public school.
Right on. So the idea behind Socratic philosophy is that you're answering a question with a question, and it's philosophical thinking versus a correct answer. So you're always asking a question, and then you're receiving another question back, which puts the ownership onto each individual hero.
Did you say individual responsibility? Is that what you just said?
Well, there is, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. That's success of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, individual,
this is a new,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, come on, man. Yeah, this is something that is completely foreign these days. It's
these days, but...
Incredible how I honestly don't understand it. I understand the hard times make hard men who make soft times and make soft men. I get it, man. But there is a level of decline that's happening so rapidly that it's shocking.
Yeah.
Like it's seriously shocking to me.
But there's still some hard men that are out here, men and women, gender mm-hmm. neutral. And man, when soft times come, I'm like, yeah, opportunities.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I said this.
You guys are all so weak.
I said this 2 years ago. All these Antifa dum-dums clamoring to get rid of police and shit like that. Like, you better pray the police stick around, because if you don't, I'm taking all of your shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you guys, you're asking for a war that you aren't prepared for.
And imagine running into two guys like this out when it's like, oh, what do we do now?
We're just like holding hands and skipping down the street.
This is amazing. The best day of my life. I get to wear this guy's face.
Yeah.
So like the Socratic education, albeit is new in proper education, and we call it disruptive now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Socrates is from 400 BC, right? So like the idea of Socratic philosophy is not new. And the approach of teaching this way is not new. It's been happening in law schools for the past, I mean, since the beginning of law school, like every, there is no answer. There's just the next question. And every Ivy League university that has a law program uses this method. And, but the assumption is that kids are too dumb to do that. And that's just not true. What we have is heroes, our students, we call heroes. They are so brilliant and they're just regular. There's nothing special about them.
Sure.
They just have the onus of having to answer these questions.
And what does it take? What's the process like for getting into one of these schools? Is it like a California where you essentially have to audition your child for private schools? I'm sure you went through that as well.
So the application process is online. You fill out the application, you send it in. We have a couple of different steps that you go through because we ask you to really do your own homework.
Right.
I come in with the knowledge that you understand what this is about.
Well, if the parent doesn't, then you know that that kid's probably not going to succeed there.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, let's set you up for success from the very beginning.
All the studies done in by California teachers unions, believe it or not, over the last, well, between I think 2007 and 2012, they studied race, gender, level of income, nationality, all sorts of other shit. The only predictor of success in primary education was parental involvement, basically. Mm-hmm. And there, you can glean whatever you want from that. But the reason probably is, one, the kid feels equity in the process.
Absolutely.
Right? Like they feel like if I do X, Y is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That is the entire point of individual responsibility.
Yeah.
And is there something you two are looking for when these applications come in, where you see an application, you're like, oh man, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's a fun way to look at things.
We literally had 1,000 something applications, mm-hmm. and she has accepted 30 something of them.
Yeah.
And what are you looking for exactly?
I mean, I'm looking for people who have follow through, who actually follow the directions, who show up on time when they're supposed to show up on time, who put in the effort, and then also have a strong understanding of what this is, and not just, hey, I really want my child to grow up and be a doctor. Like, how do we get them there? It's really like, hey, my kid's a super genius and he's great, and I just want him to learn how to learn.
Isn't it strange that you have to ask for effort from parents anymore? Like when you said that, I was like, because you hear it all the time.
But there's the right kind of effort.
Yeah.
There's also, I mean, she kind of showed her hand a little bit, because what we're looking for is, I don't want my kid is going to be a doctor and this is how you're going to do it. Please show me what their grades are every single week. What I want is buy-in, and there's love and compassion and responsibility and ownership of the process. And it's going to be this collective collaboration within the family unit to really see that individual hero become successful. Imagine that, right? Like, what's that bomb IED movie where the
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker, like the worst military movie in history. No, where like the lone wolf goes out.
Are your EOD guys don't go outside the wire with a pistol?
No.
And rescue children?
Right, but then we like look at Black Hawk Down or Saving Private Ryan, and what we see is that camaraderie, that collective collaboration where like, you're not going to do this alone. I don't care what's going to happen. I'm going to jump on this grenade with you. Like that, I'm going to beat you to that grenade. You know, there's that kind of spirit. And that's what garners success, no doubt, right? When we look in the most elite special operations unit, that kind of collective energy is the same thing that we're looking at with an individual home, where like, I want the dad and the mom to be as invested in the child as the child is invested in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this masterful way of seeing through the lines of these response emails. Mm-hmm. Like, you might say all the right words, but I also know who you are as a parent, and you're going to be a pain in my ass. So pass.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
you being a parent, Tim, was there a day where you woke up and just said, I'm tired of the education my kids are getting and I want to create this?
Yeah.
And what was it?
Well, having struggled myself in early, you know, my parents had to bring me and have me be homeschooled, you know, getting paddled and getting in trouble at private schools, I just would have not succeeded. I was not invited back to North County Christian School in Atascadero, California. So if that principal's still out there, look at me now.
Hawaiian shirt.
Yes. Yes.
And they're snappy.
On a Tuesday.
I'll make my own school.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make my own school with my own rules.
And so you have.
Yeah. I have grown daughters that are in college, and looking at their peers struggling with adulthood, like not balancing a checkbook or being able to change a tire or knowing how to fill up their car with gas, or, I mean, understanding basic finances, where if you make $1,000 a year, but you or $1,000 a month, but you spend $1,400, you're now $400 in debt. And as time goes on, that number continues to grow because you have to pay interest on those $400. Mm-hmm. And then the next month that you're also $400, you're not 800 now. Now you're like 800 plus that 10% of the credit card company, like some really basic things. And their freshman years in college, they're like, oh, I'm bankrupt. I can't pay for school. I can't pay for my dorm. I can't pay for my books. I can't pay for my gas. And I'm just looking at this like, what happened to these poor young people that are failing at everything? They can't get a job. They're picking a major that is going to be useless. And while the cycle of weak men make hard times, I don't think it's too late for us to like take the Titanic and just turn it a little bit so we don't hit an iceberg. Mm-hmm. Like I still have faith in the possibility of, and I have hope that we can still like.
Have you read the Coddling of the American Mind?
Yeah.
Good book, right? I mean, the one phrase that sticks out is prepare your children for the road, not the road for your children. We have done the latter half for the last 25 years or so.
Yeah.
Like we've tried to ease the tension of what it means to be alive and make decisions and have responsibility. That's fucking stupid. None of those things are going away. Ever.
Yeah. They're getting worse.
No, well, the funny part is they get worse as you take less responsibility for them. So it is a compounding factor, just like the debt thing. And it just gets worse and worse. And this next generation, we've been talking, we had Troxel, the former SEAC, on the show, two, 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. And we were just wondering aloud, whatever the next big war is, who is going to fight that motherfucker? Because it's probably going to have to be us again.
Yeah,
I guess. Down. I mean, I'm down, but that's not really how it's supposed to be.
Keep those knees fresh and lube.
Well, you said ACL surgery. Yeah, I'm ready to hop back.
Well, I got a PT test coming in November, and I'm like 5 months out from ACL surgery. And I was like, hey, doc, and I got to jump tomorrow. I'm doing some free fall stuff tomorrow. And I was like, hey, am I good for this? He's like, no, absolutely not. I'm like, okay.
Just keep your feet and knees together. You'll be fine.
I have to do it. So how do we get around this? To that point, though, when you like preparing them for the road, there's from the Acton schools, it's we're learning to be and learning to do and not learning to know. Right. Yeah. That's a fair distinction that is, I think, really significant. But when you're preparing a young mind to do a test or preparing the test for that young mind, we have a problem. Like we should just be preparing them to succeed. And that's what the coolest thing about this process. Talk about some of the...
You're referencing like the standardized testing, right?
What trash. Especially,
it's completely absurd, and it's worse in low-income areas.
Yeah.
Because they only teach to the test because they lose funding if they don't meet certain requirements.
And some kids are great at those. Some kids aren't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was very smart. I graduated with honors, but I was terrible at the test. I was terrible at the SATs. I was terrible at the ACTs. If you were to judge me just based on those tests, I'd be a fucking dum-dum. But... luckily, there's more. And with your school, what are you guys doing to improve upon that and make it less about standardized tests?
So think about it this way, right? So traditional education.
I'm so glad you're here, by the way.
Thank you. It's very exciting to be here.
Yeah, answer these questions because I'm like, all right.
If you think about traditional education, they say, here's what you're going to learn. And then you're going to learn it for this amount of time. And then when you're finished, we're going to see how much you learned versus, hey, here's a book. Want to learn?
Right.
I mean, think about how much you're willing to try when someone's not standing over going, ugh, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, really close, but you didn't quite get it. You know, there was somebody said the other day, well, when you got 80% on that test, like, what about the other 20%?
Mm-hmm.
It just went away. No one ever took the other 20% and said, ooh, you know what? You didn't understand that, so let's grow on this piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in that way...
But if you set out to learn something on your own, you would never do it that way.
You would never do
it
that
way. Like, you would learn... Like, your brain knows this. Your brain understands naturally what recall is. For those of you who don't know in education, recall is you spend X amount of time studying something, then you need about a 30-minute break for it to latch onto your fucking brain, for lack of a better phrase. Your brain understands this. It has these rhythms naturally that do these things. And if you like just decided to go use like get Babbel, which is a sponsor of ours, and learn a language, the reason they set it up in 15-minute increments is specifically for that. So you as the individual can determine how you're going to fucking learn that material.
And the material that you're learning is actually useful in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. The smartest people on the planet developed this way not because they're the smartest people on the planet, because they were like, oh, this is just how it works.
This is just how the brain works.
It was a discovery. It wasn't an invention. That's a very different fucking thing.
Yeah.
And the reward when you are able to accomplish or do something or learn something, like what's the most, when something hands somebody something to you for free,
that's dopamine. Yeah. And then when you work for yourself,
yeah,
it's serotonin.
Right? Yeah. And it's so long
lasting.
It's so
much better.
And it lasts. And that not only is the sensation of, like, if I go and dig a hole compared to paying somebody go and do it, and I look at that hole, I'm like, okay, I have a hole, compared to the after product of I put effort and sweat into this and now I have a hole.
There's actually a name for this. It's called the IKEA effect, right? So
yeah,
I'm not kidding. This is a legit psychological phenomenon. When you give somebody something that even if it's 80 or 90% complete and they finish the last 10 to 20%, they are more likely, one, to enjoy that product and to buy it again because they put some of their own effort into it. This is basic human psychology.
And they take care of the product longer.
Yeah.
Because when you put it together, then you're like, all right, well, I don't want this fucked up because I put it together.
So what we've done with our country is give everybody everything for free without having them invest anything at all. And then the expectation comes that they continue to get it for free and don't have to invest. And now we're in that fucking decline.
So we should do that with our children for sure. Like, we should just give them everything really easy and give them a sense of entitlement. I mean, if we're going to do it with really crappy furniture that you buy for like $99 and you're going to love that more than your child, maybe we have a problem.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Throw this out there.
How many grades are there in your school? Are you guys in elementary schools? It's K through 12.
Well, we'll start out with pre-K, TK age, all the way up to fifth grade elementary school.
Got it.
And then we'll launch a middle school, and then we'll launch, a high school.
Are you trying to start that way so you can see the middle and high schools with the younger students?
It's designed that way so that the hero, like, here's the thing about a Socratic school or a school where the heroes have ownership and responsibility for everything that happens in that space. Mm. Those leaders, those oldest heroes become the leaders and they have the responsibility and they help their peers learn and grow and be accountable and have personal responsibility.
And as they graduate, they pass it down to the other kids.
Exactly.
That's great.
So they onboard the other heroes.
But it codifies the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, we know this to be absolutely
true.
Train
the trainer. Teaching something you learn it makes you learn it so much better.
And the combatives guy that, like, he goes to level one and he's like, all right, I can fight a little bit. But then he goes and he has to teach at level two. And then he's like, oh, I really know this curriculum now.
Because you know why it is what it is.
Exactly.
That's the difference. Knowing why it exists, or that is how you ultimately learn how to communicate things to other people.
But this is happening at the hero level. Mm-hmm. Like, this, there's not a teacher in there being like, okay, this is what's happening. That is happening internally. It is a learner driven environment. Mm-hmm. So the chemistry and the balance within each of those respective studios has to be precise. And that's kind of the brilliance about the guides, is they have to know the topics and the teaching methods and the way that each of these individual heroes learn to such like a nuanced, subtle level that they can know which questions to ask and they know how to guide them and put the curbs and the bumpers as the balls are rolling down the alley to keep it in line to get those strikes. And so it's a way harder, more complex. Mm. I mean, it's
natural though. Every group, whether you identify them as such or not, has a leader.
Yeah.
In a leadership structure, it forms naturally. If you put more than one person in a room together, somebody's going to end up being the leader of that fire team or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah.
It just happens. So why not make it a thing that you're doing on purpose?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And why do not
it by design, strategically.
Like formalize it at some point. So then you can observe how it works and then make improvements on it, or maybe see that you don't need to make improvements. It just does it on its own. I mean, who knows, right?
Yeah, and having kids at that age of your mm-hmm. school, they are smart enough and they can take on
absolutely
that type of responsibility.
For sure.
I think that's a misconception that it's like, oh, no, they're only kindergartners or they're only... No, they're a lot smarter than we think they are, but they're only going to be pushed to do things if there is somebody willing to say, hey, look, you made a mistake and we're going to do this and we're going to correct it and we're going to move on from that instead of... You know, hands off, and I've got a call. There's some, the calls we get. The only reason, by the way, I'm going to hold this up to the camera. Only reason I have this fucking phone next to my desk all day long is in case a teacher calls because it's the tiniest things. Like, oh, he hit his head on a door. Mm. Great. Is he bleeding? Does he have a bruise? No. We just want you to know, and if you want to come get him, you can.
That could have been a text, lady.
Did you ask? The child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like that's the first question that ever happens in here. Parents are going to come to Alexis and be like, hey, I got a problem with this. I'm like, oh, okay. Did you talk to your child about this? And they're like, I mean, yeah, but what they said is like, okay, well, did you talk to that child's studio?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it all happens. The problem solving has to happen internally. Right. And the end result, the product of this is this beautiful, refined, independent leader in every single one of them. So the graduates from these, and it's now old enough, the Socratic Actons, mm-hmm. where we have entrepreneurs. I'm talking like an 18-year-old that is now running a multi-million dollar business. And you're like, God dang it. Yeah. Cool. You've just been doing this since you're six.
Yeah.
So this is easy for you. You know, like things that were like really hard as an entrepreneur and be like, wait, I have to make a profit and loss state. What is this?
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah, yeah. What's a P&L?
Yeah.
What's a P&L at the end of the day?
I don't understand the difference between revenue, equity, and profit.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not the same.
So when you start doing that when you're 5 and 6 years old, you know, it's just a compounded learning environment where you had your lemonade stand and now you're, you know, producing lemonade and now you're trademarking your, you know, lemonade label. I mean, it's all of that is happening before they ever get there.
These Socratic schools are a lot more than just producing good business people, though, absolutely. Right? It's about producing good people generally.
Well, it's just about the idea of entrepreneurship.
Right.
Right. Yeah. The idea that you can be an entrepreneur instead of saying, well, you better get a, you know.
So the thing about the small business, and I think why a lot of institutions like the government hate small business is because it puts such an emphasis on that individual to be successful. And I don't need anything from anybody else because the onus is on me to succeed. And that idea of success and failure is on my shoulders. Me being able to feed my family is like nobody's going to feed my family for me. They're not going to provide medical equipment or medical supplies or insurance. Like I have to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that same kind of pride in their own success happens at six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're capable of it. We're just not allowing them to do it everywhere else.
No. And Dan and I have talked about this numerous times over the last year. We're now in a creator economy where it isn't really necessary to go to college. If you have these skills to start a business, be an entrepreneur, learn a P&L sheet and everything growing up, because the way everything is going with YouTube and everything else,
exactly.
There's a lot of money out there to be made. It's not necessarily in college in the traditional learning anymore.
You can go right now as an 18-year-old, provided you qualify academically and take out a $250,000 loan for the next 4 years and spend the rest of your goddamn life paying for it. But you can't get a $20,000 business loan to start a business at 18. Yeah.
No. And
that is
done.
A big problem.
And Wells Fargo, by the way, just shut down any business loans. So they're out on that altogether.
Well, I mean, it's about this. When she says it's the entrepreneurship is standing for something. Liberty, individual determinism, personal entrepreneurship is the ultimate inoculation to tyrannical bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
The more power these assholes have, the more they can flex it on you. And if you take that power away, they only have power because we allow it.
Right.
That's it. They don't have the guns.
Yeah.
They don't have the strength or even the knowledge to use the goddamn things. All they have is influence because we need what they have, which is large amounts of capital or regulatory environments or whatever it is. They just they preside over that, but only because we allow them to.
Yeah.
We've forgotten about that, apparently.
We have, and also these new ways of thinking are often challenged by the government and the community and everything else. Can you guys chat about the difficulties of starting a school? Because behind the scenes, going through the government regulations and everything else, especially with children, is brutal, I heard. I can't believe you actually got it going.
Well,
because there's so much red tape.
We're still fighting.
We are still fighting.
I can imagine.
We're like 5 weeks out, and you know, from COVID restrictions to vaccinations to certificates of occupancy from the city to, I mean, like, their fingers are so deeply strangling small business. It's not even a school, just small business. It's so hard for anybody to succeed because at every point you're having to pay somebody else to allow you to run your business.
Right. Yeah.
And then which first of all is asinine. Mm. And then when you get into, we can educate better than you can, then it's like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Now I really want to look at everything that you're doing. And, you know, from fire code, which I get, life, like fire and safety, it's going to be perfect.
Sure.
Everything's going to be new and everything's going to be the code. But the scrutiny is so disingenuous because it's not coming from a position of wanting to protect the children. It's coming from one, money, and then two, control.
Leveraging control. That's all it is.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah.
It's fired up, Ross.
Hey, that's what we're here for today. Yeah. That's what we're here for today. Because look, once the school board gets involved too, they're worried about funding being pulled from them.
Mm-hmm. They're going to lose
it. I'm sure you've dealt with that.
I have in the past, yeah. And that's why I'm in private education now.
So with private education, where does the money come from? Did you guys get a bunch of donors?
We in the past week allowed scholarships for students. And it's private school. We are organized as a private company for the one reason of limiting scrutiny from government people.
Right.
From a private school care or to a private school to early child care. All of those things are choices to limit the scrutiny from, I'm using the word scrutiny kindly.
It's a nice euphemism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, we don't want anybody in there that doesn't have the center of gravity for everything that we're going to be doing is the heroes.
Exactly.
And anything else is secondary. Mm-hmm. And
there's a lot of profiteers in the education industry.
Yes.
Both
control and profit.
Financial and social profiteers. Yes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, there's the story just came out yesterday. I can't remember which district it was, but a school district was teaching like kind of light critical race theory, but then telling the kids not to tell their parents when they got home what they were talking about in class like that. Like, all right, cool. If you're telling a child not to repeat what you've done with them to their parents, that seems like a bit of a problem.
So we have a live stream in every studio.
Really?
Yep.
That is online?
So it's like a
for the parents.
You looked at me shocked. I was like, so I could just watch my kids online learning?
Yeah, you can have an access code and watch them.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's like the dog boarding place that I send my dogs to.
Yeah.
Exactly. Cool. You do it for your dog, you should be able to do it.
You should be able to do it for your kids. No, I agree, because what are you hiding in the classroom? So that way you could pop on any part of the day and see what's going on.
And if one of the Kennedy kids decides to ball somebody up, you could be like, look, you should have slipped right here a little
bit. Yeah, you can let's watch the footage again.
Doing an after-action review on the kids. Yeah. Have the parents sign a release where we can go afterwards and insert commentary over the fights that happen.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get that.
It'd be great, though. Baby UFC.
There's not going to be fighting in our
Rush
studio.
Already did.
Pay-per-view. Are there? Baby
no,
UFC.
In the auditorium.
Okay.
On the gym mat, but not in the studios, no.
Dan, since you brought up critical race theory, Tim, I got to ask you your thoughts on it, because this is a hot-button topic. Mm-hmm. In the school system that we just came from in Wilmington, North Carolina, there was literal fights last week. One parent got arrested. Another one, it was punches thrown. It's getting brutal. What are your thoughts on teaching critical race theory in today's school system?
So I know that the heroes that are going to be at our school are going to be smart enough to understand the context of why something's written, who wrote it, and the significance of it in a historical event. So whether we're reading Huckleberry Finn or To Kill a Mockingbird, That was
the ones that have been banned.
Yeah, well, I'm just using those as an example.
Sure,
but
weird example. You know?
The context of when and why they are written are significant, and they're smart enough to understand the nuance of the era of why something. Like, were there slaves with the founding fathers? Yeah, and that's okay for us to talk about. Let's talk about what was happening economically. Was it right? No, but was it common? Yes. Let's understand why. Let's have a conversation about it. So, critical race theory, I've read Mein Kampf, you know, I've read the Quran, I don't know, a dozen times. Am I a Muslim? No. Am I a fascist? No. But do I think it's important for me to understand as much as I can about opposing views to maybe even codify and solidify my own views, perhaps?
Well, especially with something that's that large, because that person or that ideology was able to convince a lot of people, which will give you can glean a lot about human psychology there, because maybe it's they're preying on fear, or maybe it's the carrot, whatever it is, and you can find out why and how to motivate people.
I think
that's an important thing to understand, is how to motivate people, because look, not everybody is a fucking leader. Some people need to be led, and if we're not making a concerted effort to produce leaders who can think with nuance, then we're fucked, because leaders who don't have nuance become dictators at some point.
Yeah,
that's how that works.
Nuance is not dead. I actually just tweeted and talked about that this week. So specific to critical race theory, I like history a lot. And I like history the way it happened. Mm-hmm. I don't want any editorialized or curated portion of history. I just give me the history,
right,
and I'll figure it out. So that's one of my reservations about critical race theory, is it's not history. It's just
someone else's version.
It's an op-ed of what you think about history.
Well, I mean, they're doing to history what the mainstream media has done to news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they believe that their opinion of the facts are the facts themselves, and that's not the case, obviously.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's the problem right there. Coming in and saying, "Here's what you should know."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There isn't that, and that's. I mean, that's
from my point of view. Yes. You know, not history, right. But here's from my point of view, and then we're going to pass that on. Yeah, because look, we're in the same camp on this one.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy to me, where it's like, yes, if you can't crack open a book about the Civil War. Mm. And have kids understand why it was white, right and wrong, and what you were fighting for during the time, chances are there's other things going on that are wrong with you. And it's like, I don't need someone else on top of it to say, well, then here's what happened after that.
Well,
why?
There's lessons to be learned from mistakes. That's a smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from the mistakes of others, right?
Yeah.
That is that's a 3,000 or so year old maxim, right? So that's something we should probably hang on to if it's existed that long. It seems like it's useful.
Yeah.
Like Thomas Jefferson, for example, this is a good example, wrote the Declaration of Independence. Right, he wrote it. Ben Franklin and John Adams helped to edit it down afterwards, but he wrote the thing. And in it, he talked about slavery being, his original version, slavery being an abomination, even though he was having sex with one of his slaves and producing children with her, right? The fact that he believed in individual liberty above all else on earth, that was the religion of Thomas Jefferson for sure. He believed in that above all else. But still was able to do this evil thing at the same time, because according to his own words, it's going to take some time, a few generations, to get rid of this shit. Now that we've actually established a government that supports getting rid of it, it's going to take several generations to do it. That is a lesson that children can learn today about politics. We can't get everything done in a 4-year term. We can't get it done in 20 years sometimes.
Yeah.
Things take time. And the fact that we have this peaceful transfer of power every 4 years is unique, right? In a situation with this many people, we're governing 350 million people now. So learning that nuance and that it takes time to do things builds investment and equity into the process itself. And people feel like, oh, okay, just because this doesn't happen today doesn't mean that my vote doesn't count anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is just one example of how studying that shit as it happened could teach you how to think like a normal fucking human being.
Right. But everybody wants their version right now, in your face, and they're willing to fight for it, literally, at school boards and meetings across the country right now.
I've been loving watching the school board fight. I've been waiting for this, and I knew it was coming.
It's like watching British Parliament.
And, yeah. When I had almost lost faith that we had a chance until I started on this journey of opening the school and meeting parents that Alexis is bringing into the school and meeting the families and meeting these other guides. We have the most brilliant guides on the planet. And I wasn't hopeless, but I was like, man, this is going to be a fight. And it has been a fight. But then now, once I got into this world and I started seeing this rampant passion of millions of parents that are going to these school boards and be like, we're going to fucking fight over this.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a chance. You either quit right now and walk out that goddamn door, or we're going to stay here until you do.
Yeah.
And it's like, where were you 10 years ago? Because you've let them get this far, and it was an incremental degradation of the school system for them to get that much control to be able to do what they're doing now. But now we're like awake. Like, I'll use the word woke. The parents are finally woke.
Yeah.
And they're like, not going to happen.
Yeah.
We're still in fights in Austin, which is why we have to have our own private school that's organized the way that we are. You know,
Tim, you've been on the show before. You know the rules. We got some sponsors that pay for this whole shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. 30% off everything in the entire store. 2 free pillows with a free mattress. And there is a 40% flash sale going on right now, so take advantage of it. The bundle packages, man, are probably where it's at. If you're going to use that zero down, zero interest program for 36 months, if you have decent credit, that's probably where the best money can be spent, simply because you can walk out of there with a new mattress set for don't know, $38 a month, something like that. It ships right to your house in a box. All of it super easy to put together as well. I have that adjustable base. I'm not a handyman, and I put that goddamn thing together in like 10 minutes. GhostBed.com/drinking bros has the finest products there is regarding anything in the bed industry. The sheets are amazing. I've gone on about the pillows. Their new pillow topper is also amazing. It's got a cooling element to it. It feels like it takes down like 15 degrees. I'm not a scientist. Don't try to verify that, but that's my guess. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and find out for yourself. Next up, since you're listening into this show, it's safe to say you love podcasts. Well, you're going to find a ton of binge-worthy podcasts, including ours, now on Amazon Music. Super amped about this. Never have been a fan of iTunes, but Amazon Music now has more than 10 million free podcast episodes to listen to. I'll never forget when I got that email and they're like, hey, dude, we're going to Amazon. I was like, thank Christ. But Amazon Music isn't just for listening to podcasts. They also have thousands of music stations, top playlists that all stream for free. No matter what you're listening to, you can go hands-free with Alexa, which our podcast is also available on. So if you scream out to Alexa, Alexa, Drinking Bros Podcast, boom, it'll pop up in your living room. If you're like me and you want music on demand and ad-free, looking at you, SoundCloud, I hate you. I can't stand SoundCloud. You've got to try Amazon Music Unlimited. That gives you unlimited access to over 75 million songs, as well as podcasts, music videos, and more. With Amazon Music Unlimited, you can listen to any song anywhere offline with unlimited skips. That is a big deal because when you're on Pandora or even Spotify, if you don't pay for the service, man, they only give you a certain number of skips, and you're like, dude, I don't want to hear that song. Knots on Amazon Music. Big fan of their new platform, and these guys will be taking over the world shortly, I have a feeling. If you've never tried Amazon Music Unlimited, now's a great time. For a limited time, new customers can try Amazon Music Unlimited free for 30 days. No credit card required. Just go to amazon.com/drinkingbros. That's amazon.com/drinkingbros to try Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. amazon.com/drinkingbros. Renews automatically. You can cancel anytime. Terms apply. Amped that we have our own URL with amazon.com/drinkingbros. Give it a try for real, man. It's miles ahead of the other services, and it's brand new. We're going to be with these guys for a very, very long time. Last but not least, we've got CardoMax.com, energy intensifier. Time to step up your game, kids. Before we got on, D'Anthony, Tim Kennedy was like, dude, you look thick, dude, working out. Trying to get back in the shape of it after being out of my house for 4.5 months. Got the CardoMax kicking in to every single bottle of water I own now.
Yeah, if you're looking to get motivated, I'm pretty sure that's why Sean Mattson started the company in the first place. Or if it's not, it certainly had those effects, because why the hell else would he be trying to run in bomb suits and shit like that?
Exactly. CardoMax.com is the best pre-workout, in my opinion, or pre-podcast host workout. I'm drinking on RPR every morning and drinking on Drinking Bros. That is my midday. Let's get them back up. Go to CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, where you can get a buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com, promo code DB. DB gets you that buy one, get one free on your first order. And that's only going until July 30th. So you got about 4 days to get your orders in there on the buy one, get one free with the promo code DB at CardoMax.com. I would recommend the blue raspberry and the pink lemonade. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Yeah, are you guys dealing with the city and everything else that's going on? Because right now they're supposed to be in stage four, it says.
Well, that's a recommendation, I believe, right?
Well, yeah. Look, some businesses are still wearing masks. I took my kid to a camp for the like a week-long camp. It was a huge toy store next door. I've never been to that place in Austin. Yeah, it was right there, and every day after school, I had to take him there. But as soon as you walk in, sir, mask, Sir Mask? And I was like, we're well past that now, aren't we? And they're like, no, it's up to the individual businesses and everything else.
And I'm all for that.
Yeah, that's technically true.
Yeah. I mean,
but with schools, like that's starting to become a debate now too of with the Delta variants and the Lambda Chi, Lambda, whatever is happening out there in the Greek alphabet.
Tri-Lam, yeah.
Yeah.
They're Wait, trying, that's Return of the Revenge of the Nerds.
Revenge of the Nerds. Tri-Lam, yeah. Still the same story today.
Yeah.
But do you really want to wear masks in schools and everything else? And I'm sure you're hearing that as well.
Yeah, I have the best job in the world right now. I get parents that come and say, I want the best for my hero. What are you guys doing? How can I be a part of it? And I tell them the same thing all the time. Personal responsibility. It's fine. You can choose what you want to choose. We support you 100%. But we're not here to tell you how to take care of your own body. That's for you to decide.
Child. Or your child. Want the school to tell you, the parent, what you, the parent, should be doing for you, the child.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. First of all, you can't come to our school.
You want a government that built the food pyramid whose base is useless grains, like they're fattening us up for the slaughter. Yeah. I'm all set, guy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Number two?
Yeah. Because gosh, man, I could go on about this forever. You look at everything that's happening in the school system. Yeah. To me, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
It does. It's a really great example of what happens when you take out cultural relevance and don't trust that young children can have conversations about their feelings and ideas, right? The pandemic, COVID, masks or no masks, you know, all of critical race theory, that's all going to make its way into our school in conversations brought in by the students themselves who say, here's what I'm hearing. What do we all think? Mm-hmm. What do I think about this? And then being able to discuss their ideas back and forth and have like an informed discussion, right? And be able to agree to disagree. Whereas, you know,
wait, that's not allowed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Learning conflict resolution at the earliest possible age.
Exactly.
Like with dodgeball, for example.
Yeah.
Well, not just conflict resolution. Sometimes there is not resolution. Sometimes you will have differing opinions.
Right.
And that in the ever divided country that we're in, I just had this conversation over Black Rifle Coffee where people were like, no, there is no middle ground. You can't talk to these people. And I was like, no, man. You're the one that I can't talk to.
Yeah.
We're on the same side. Mm-hmm. And you're the one that is so hopeless. You're the one that is so far gone that you don't think that I can have a conversation with a fellow American citizen and have a differing opinion. You're the one that's messed up, not them. And even though they're wrong and I don't like appreciate anything that they like, any of their beliefs, I totally disagree with, but I can still talk to them.
Yeah.
And there's middle ground that can be had there. And and we could do that at six.
Yep.
You know, like they can do that.
That's a very valuable education, right? To learn how to have a discussion with other people who don't have the same point of view as you do.
Absolutely.
And that's okay.
Because
in 5 seconds later, they're like, hey, want to go play dodgeball? Yep.
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
They're very good at it naturally.
We got some rad play plans.
we'll get to that in a second. But one of the biggest interactions a kid can have is socially at school and learning how to communicate with others to be a better human so they're not just shut-ins. Or neckbeards, as Dan likes to call them later on in life. And that's
what they are.
That's a good name.
Yeah, it is. It's a great thing.
Because it's because they lean back in their chairs like this, and gravity just pulls the hair down here.
Yeah. Well, there's no mirrors in grandma's basement. Yeah. So
no.
Exactly. They don't know how to trim it up.
The other part of that is there is a perspective and an appreciation for things in life and whatever else. That only comes through sacrifice of some sort. I've never found a way in all of my years.
Let's get a high five here.
In all of my years, I've never found a way to communicate what it feels like to somebody who's never experienced it. So these like skinny white dum-dums in the Pacific Northwest that think that they're under a fascist regime somehow. Like I can take you to go see fascism if you'd like.
Yeah.
And then you can make up your mind. But
Taliban did a pretty good job yesterday of demonstrating what that looks like. They killed more citizens in one day than Afghan history.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I know what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we certainly do. And so how do you communicate that to a kid? You can't obviously put them in dangerous situations, but what you can do is, this is my idea. I think this should be universal, but I don't know that I would want the government being involved in it necessarily because of how they tend to leverage things, but beyond that certain age, from 6 years old or whenever it is on, to graduate to the next grade, you need to fucking perform some kind of act of service for your community or some community every single year, all the way through college. If I forget about learning a second language, right? I mean, if you need one, then fucking learn one for sure. But why is that mandatory? You know what I mean? I would rather have a good person who speaks one language than some shitbag who speaks five.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Certainly not.
I want really good kids that will speak five languages.
Well, that's because you're a special forces guy.
Yeah.
You're indoctrinated.
Well, speaking of like, your sponsor is who?
Babbel.
Babbel.
Oh, Babbel, oh, yes. Babbel,
yeah. Can I get a code?
Yes.
So I just left my broadening assignment on the Special Forces side, and I have to go back to the teams, and I have to take the D-Lab again for the first time.
You have to take D-Lab.
Oh, yeah. I'm back in, man. So, hey, can I get a code?
Yeah. Babbel.com, B-A-B-B-E-L.com, promo code Drinking Bros.
Yeah.
3 months free. So you get 6 months for the price of three.
Okay, there you go. My D-Lab's in November. So
you have plenty of time.
Biatzi.
You got plenty of time.
Three coming my way.
What are some of the non-traditional things that you guys will be teaching at school? Because a lot of the people in the message boards are like, is it going to be a mat in the middle of the hallway? Is there going to be fights? Aren't you like, what are some of the cool non-traditional things that you have planned for kids that might not be part of the curriculum at an elementary school that's, let's say, in the rest of the state of Texas?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, we talk a lot about like that learner-driven idea, right? Mm-hmm. So they're learning math, they're learning reading, writing, all at their own pace in different ways. Every session, we have a quest. A quest is a different theme, a different hands-on project that we do 7 times out of the year. So those will be anything from like, you know, life skills to we had a survivor quest. We've had an electricity quest. Those are where we get the hands-on science, social studies, you know, things that we bring in experts on. So if you want to learn how to, you know, light up a city, that was part of our electricity quest. We taught, you know,
like how an energy grid works, basically.
How an energy grid works. You know,
yeah, not the Texas energy grid.
Yeah, ERCOT. Not ERCOT, right?
Here's how a good one works.
The survival stuff is like, how many children now do you think know how to use a map and a protractor?
Zero.
Okay, zero.
Zero.
Yeah. Zero.
Zero.
So I'm going to have like Delta Force squadron commanders walking in and, you know, Matt Smith, Sergeant Major, coming from Special Forces that's been training young men his whole entire adult life on Fridays.
Yeah. Right?
Like Alexis is going to be like, Tim, so this is who I want. I'm like, yes, ma'am. And then in comes this, the most remarkable man of our generation to teach these heroes how to insert the raddest thing.
Right.
And that'll be part of the quest.
Now,
and it should be, by the way. And I hate to interrupt you, Jan.
Mine was going to be silly, and it's going to come anyway. So go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But look, when I was at NYU, for example, in film school, they used to bring in famous actors every Friday or directors. And it was 20 kids in a class, and you get to sit there and talk to Matt Damon for 3 hours. And be like, all right, great. What's really happens in the industry? What really happens on movie shoots and everything else? I learned more on that one session, on that one week, than I learned than any other class throughout the week, because I was actually talking to people who were successful, who had gone through it, and they could give me actual life knowledge.
I mean, is there
that
more
I could apply to my career versus a book or some movie or something?
I'm like, is there a more useless position than a business school teacher?
Well, I mean, I know what they failed at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Business.
The job.
Business, yeah.
Because they're doing that.
If they were there. Yeah. Because a lot of the teachers at NYU were successful agents, screenwriters, things, and they were retired just coming back to be like, all right, here's how it really is. And they were assholes. And like kids were crying on the first day, and this was grad school, for Christ's sakes. I'm like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I imagine it will be very similar, but you're also getting life lessons from people who've actually done it.
Exactly.
Done the shit. Not just taught about it. They've actually done it.
Yeah.
And that's exciting.
It is really exciting. It's fun to see an entrepreneur who can talk about their own hero's journey. And then that's that service that we talk about, right? Like coming back in and teaching others. So it's not just, it doesn't stop like, oh, you figured that out, way to go. How do you share that? How do you give back? Yeah. And so that's been a really amazing thing to be able to have these heroes be exposed to somebody who has a successful business, or, you know, somebody who graduated from Acton and came back and said, here's how you can be a really great Acton hero. I mean, it's that small or it's that large. And I think that's really, I mean, people ask me all the time, why would you go start a school with Tim Kennedy? They'll look they'll look him up on Wikipedia or something and be like, wow, that guy, seriously?
But that's the cool thing. Like, I mean, look,
that's
podcasts,
exactly
for example, because of Tim, what he's done in his career and his life, he's got contacts to reach out to people that's like, all right, great. You want to learn about podcasting? Today's guest is Joe Rogan. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure people have called left and right to come out and volunteer to speak to the school.
I've worked at several schools. I've been doing this a long time. The outreach and the outpouring, because of the you know, large amount of followers that Tim has, the how we're able to spread the news about this school. I mean, people that have been in education a really long time who are just outstanding humans who say, we just want to come back and we just want to be a part of it. Yeah. Like, we love what you're doing. This is super exciting.
So we announced that we're going to have a private library and that we're going to have, so I don't want just Austin rich kids coming to our private school.
Sure.
The value of having people from different races and different cultures and different socioeconomic backgrounds. And, you know, obviously families that are living in North Austin that are working at Fort Hood, for example, the dad's gone 12 months every 3 years. Like that young hero has a different life than, you know, everyone else in that school. And there's huge intrinsic value of having that diversity in the classroom. So the scholarship was, okay, how do we subsidize getting these other families in here, because it's value added for everyone. Yes, the ones that can afford to be there, they are amazing families and they deserve to be there, but so do all of these other families. So the scholarship, and then with the private library, I was like, I want all the books, you know, like the books that, you know, maybe you can't buy on Amazon anymore.
Yeah.
Like that Dr. Seuss wrote. I like those books still. And I understand when they were written and I understand who Dr. Seuss was. Do you know that he wrote propaganda for civil, what was psychological affairs in World War II?
Yeah.
Nope. And they're like, we have to out, like,
it was he was writing for the OSS basically.
Was he a real doctor?
The CIA. No. He was writing for the, like, the, what is now the CIA, the military OSS. He was writing books and pamphlets to fight fascism and racism and to, like, you know, bring the American spirit and freedom across the Atlantic. And we're going to take his books off
and
target.
Somehow his books are taken off target, but Walt goddamn Disney is the biggest company in the world right now.
Yeah.
Right? A guy who is severely anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
And spent a lot of his own money to that effect. He was a member of the fucking American National Socialist Organizations.
Yeah. But they're really trying to balance all of his wrongs with maybe going a little bit too far the other way now.
Maybe.
Disney? Yeah.
Come on, Disney. Maybe. Come on, Disney. Bring it back a little
bit. Exactly. Grab another topo for Tim here. After wrestling to start the show for 15 minutes, he's a little dehydrated, a little thirsty.
By the way, my question from earlier that was going to be silly is, let's say one Friday you happen to have like a relatively local person come in, somebody like Jared Taylor, what would he be teaching to the children?
How to eat hot dogs.
No, he's pretty good at it.
I mean, like,
long,
can I get his MIG?
Yes.
Did he buy that? Is that a, did Habsies. We confirm that?
Yeah,
he went halfsies on a MIG with somebody, right?
Yeah. He sent me that picture. He's like, hey, check this out. I was like, what is that? He's like, it's a MIG. Can I fly on that? He's like, yeah. I'm like, are you, like, don't tease me here. Like,
he's a couple of weeks out from having his solo license.
Yeah.
So then you guys can go do, I don't know, a sortie or something.
That's next level, because I know you have a helicopter, right?
No, my best friend has helicopters. I just use his.
Got it. This is a step above.
Oh, yeah.
If you have your own MIG.
This is more of a leap. I fly rotary wing, Robinson's.
Yeah.
And 22s.
If people are wondering if Black Rifle's doing all right, when you have your own MIG, you're fine.
They're doing great.
To be honest, Jared would probably get rid of one of his kids for a MIG, though. He's weird about planes.
Yes. Loves planes.
That might be the thing he's the most into in the world.
I would love, but he is to the core. If you take out Air Force Special Operations stuff, he is who we want because he's a creative, period. Insert whatever modality he is a creator in,
right.
Whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's videography, whether it's a movie. That was fun, right?
Yeah.
Like all he is a creator of insert something fun. And like that right brain funness that exists in there. I would be in there for that little chat.
But he's also a people finder. He's the one that put all of us together.
Yeah. It's
from all different backgrounds and all that stuff.
That skill set has always been valuable, but I don't think it's ever been more valuable than it is today.
Yeah.
Like we're fighting back corporatism now. We're fighting during the pandemic when 600,000 American small businesses went away forever. Amazon got way bigger, right? Google got way bigger.
But we put a penis rocket in the air.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff Bezos.
I'm not sure exactly where people think that's going, but I can tell you where it's going. It's going into a direction where that Tim Wu talked. I haven't mentioned Tim Wu on the show in a while, so I guess I should do that. The master switch. It's going in the direction that he predicts, which is every time any kind of new technology or economic modality appears, the government tries to weaponize it against the people. Always throughout all of human history, that's happened. Whether it's the internet or the fucking railroads or anything else, like the press in general here in America. And it only goes in one direction. It goes in a direction where politicians have power and the people who have money keep them in power. And they fight against the people. That's every dystopian novel you've ever read is because that is how the fucking system works.
Right.
They weren't fucking entertainment. They were warnings. And we were like, oh, that's fucking cool. Let's make a movie about it.
No. Now it's just the three richest guys going to space. And then now they want to compete. I don't know if you read today's article. Bezos wants to compete for the moon. And he's willing to give NASA billions of dollars if they don't make it and everything else. And he's betting on it, and he's betting other entrepreneurs on it. So,
I think space travel is important, and having rich people pay for it is better than you and I having to pay for it.
I love one of my favorite memes coming from Bezos and was it Richard Branson?
Yeah.
That aircraft's gorgeous. Whoever designed that, like...
The Virgin Atlantic or whatever.
They've always had the best.
I don't
they're
know where
so stunning. Bezos, their outfits were.
How does Bezos not know? Maybe it's an inside joke or something.
I think he knew.
He just flew a dick rocket. Yeah. What the hell is going on?
A clunky, not even well proportioned penis rocket.
Yeah, it was very bizarre.
Yeah,
I read the explanation behind it. He said the circular, the head on the top was for visuals. So that
what
way
about
when
the
you,
shaft? How what was that for?
Now the shaft, that's more for pleasure. The top, apparently it's some outlook or whatever they're able to see in space. Come on, man. Yeah. If you're standing back from the launch pad, you know that's a goddamn dick rocket.
Yeah, use cameras, bro. Yeah.
Yes,
but like all the kids. We're like, oh, great, another rich guy spending billions. You know, they could have given that money to us. And then you just see a picture of the Wright brothers, like just a couple of rich guys trying to do aviation stuff.
Yeah, first in flight.
Yeah. Then we beat the commies to the moon.
There we are.
You know, come on.
America. Tim, we'd be remiss on this show if we don't ask you about a little bit of MMA.
Okay.
A little bit of bare knuckle boxing.
Oh, yeah.
We just called the events live on Friday night for Paige VanSant with Chuck Liddell, who's a friend of yours.
Yeah.
We asked Chuck live on air if he would get back in the ring for a certain dollar amount. Now, he did say yes. He goes, that dollar amount does exist out there. However, it's not been offered yet.
Yep.
What about you?
Could you imagine him in a bare knuckle? Fight
or you like what's to stop you from doing that?
Look at my hand.
There, you've got big mitts,
dude. Yeah.
So I mean, I know Chuck's number. So now, and I told it to you off air. So now you know. You just throw that up the promotion.
We will. We have a meeting with him next week.
Now you know
the number.
What's the number?
What's the Tim Kennedy number?
I mean, so I got like $500,000 to come in there, but when I left the last time, when I got scuffed up by Kevin Gesslum, and I was like, man, I don't want to get hit in the face for money again. And just like I don't want to eat a breach charge because I need to put food on my table, I want to throw a flashbang or a frag grenade or eat a breach charge because it's the right thing to do. If I'm going to take sacrifices and I'm going to do work, it's like for school. It's for the right reasons. And so like I don't know if going out and doing a bare knuckle fight is in the right reason category. Could I do something, if they throw me the Chuck Liddell type numbers to go out there and I could do a lot with that kind of money. I could open.
That's a lot of schools.
Yeah.
I could open three schools.
And by the way, that's why I ask. Yeah. Because is there a dollar amount where you're like, you know what, if I'm going to give this to kids and do it, I'll get back in there and either fuck somebody up or get fucked up.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to get fucked up. I don't know what that came from.
Look, Tim. Look.
Look, Ross.
We discussed it.
Yeah. That was a minute ago.
But that was unfair because we were in New York, actually. I don't even if you remember this, but we were at the McGregor fight. You were supposed to be on that card.
Yeah, I was supposed to fight Rashad.
Mm-hmm. In 2016. And then what happened? Was it PEDs or did you have an injury or something?
Yeah, both. He won't get cleared. I don't think he wanted to fight. And I mean, Madison Square Gardens, New York at New Year's Eve card, and cutting weight for that was hard. First of all, it was bad cut.
Yeah,
to fight Rashad, and it was as soon as my plane landed and my phone started blowing up. You know how it is when like you're at altitude and kind of pre Delta Wi-Fi, and the plane landed and Joe Silva's like, "Hey, fight's off," and I was like, and my phone's just like blowing up from Twitter and from other my coaches that were already on the ground. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? So Rashad was off. And then, you know, I fought Gesslem a few weeks later and I had to cut again and body was just a wreck, absolute mess. And, you know, beats me up. But,
and that's why I can't quantify that as a loss. Like, cause we saw you and we were there with you at Madison Square Garden as you were walking around and you were seeing the excitement and everything else. And you're like, God damn it. I wish I was in here
Nobody would have beat me that night.
You know, that's what I felt like too. And then you had to cut weight again and you got screwed. No, out of that.
Well, we talked to Anik about all this stuff, about how the UFC or fans of the UFC or maybe commentators or whomever put way too much emphasis on losses. Like it's, if a football team goes, there's a 17 game season now. If they go like 12-5 this year, that's considered a good season. Yeah. They still lost 5 games.
Yeah.
Like who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Why do we put such an emphasis on the loss? Anybody can beat anybody on any given day, right? You especially come in tuned
top,
up like that,
that
you
top
probably
level.
Yeah, you could have beat anybody that day. It would have mattered who they put in the ring, you would have whooped their ass. Yeah. Sometimes it's just like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people run into the buzzsaw sometimes like, oh shit, I didn't see that coming.
And
it
I
happens.
I think that's why we all want to see you fight again just one more time. In whatever format it is.
Yeah.
But like bare knuckle boxing in particular, it was God damn it. It's 2-minute rounds.
It's fun.
Russian,
it's fun Russian and there's nowhere to go.
I actually like longer rounds.
Really?
Yeah. I love like 10, 20, 30 minute rounds.
Oof.
I love the 10 minute rounds. My dad and I driving down here. Chuck cornered me in 3 fights and we were talking through what it was like to have Chuck in my corner. I fought Jason Mayhem Miller, Ryan Narte in one night and it was pride rules. So you could kick the down opponent, you could knee to the head of a down opponent. I think you could even headbutt on this card. So I was like in heaven. Like these are like my favorite rules ever. I'm like, okay, don't eye gouge, don't kick him in the dick. And that's it.
That's it.
So this is amazing. And so I scuff up the first 2 dudes and I get cut by a glove because we didn't tape our gloves back then.
Sure.
And you wouldn't even wrap your hands. So I just put my hands inside of, you know, my meat hooks inside of these leather gloves. And I get Jason Mayhem Miller slices me with a punch. Just the friction of the seam of the glove. And I win this fight. I still have one more fight to do to be the ECC middleweight champion in this 8-man tournament. And Chuck whisks me away. Matt Hughes is the ref. He's the champion at the time, and he's the ref of the fights. And he sticks me in a broom closet, and there's like mops, you know, and there's like some disinfectants.
Cleaning supplies. Yeah.
And he's like, all right. And he hands me a chunk of metal that he got on an ice bucket, and he's like, press that against your eye. Don't come out of here until I come and get you, because the doctors were trying to find me to look at my cut. And so he was like going around and he comes, he like opens the door. He's like, all right, come on. And we walk out and we started my fight. And I was so poor when I fought at this card. Chuck paid for my hotel room. When I had to cut weight at the YMCA, he paid cash for me to go and use their sauna. And,
really?
Yeah. And I was kind of a coattail rider at the pit because I wasn't good enough to be there with that level of guys. Because it was really the first mega fight camp. You know, at that time they had maybe 8 guys in the UFC and Pride, and then there was like this 19-year-old that was doing okay in amateurs. You know, so I was just like trying to get in there. And this was Chuck went, and this was the first fight that he cornered for me, and we just mopped the ground with everybody else's blood. And after he hid me in a Harry Potter broom closet, you know,
I'm not at all surprised by anything about that story. One, Chuck is a good dude.
Amazing.
So I'm not surprised he would do all that other stuff. But he's also a bit of a fucking shyster, so I'm not surprised that he hits you in a broom closet either.
You guys have the same hands, by the way.
I know.
Both huge fucking mitts. Where it's such a difference in real life where you're like, man.
He's hiding his hands.
No, shit. Who gives a shit? Like, you're Tim Kennedy. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
You're fine. By the way, I never told you this story, and I wanted to next time you were on. In 2014, when Jared had reached out to me about Range 15, and writing the scripts and everything else, I went to his house in El Paso, and we were writing the scripts for like a week straight. And then on Saturday nights, he goes, hey, we're all going on base to watch this guy fight. The guy was Tim Kennedy. It was you. So I was like, what's the background or whatever? And he's like, dude, he's one of us. He's military. Like, everybody's here from... It was a wing place on a base in El Paso, Texas. People were going ballistic. The guy was sitting on a chair, and it appeared as if you won the fight, and everybody's screaming Do you know the fight that I'm talking about? You have to know the fight that I'm talking about.
That would have been 2015, right?
Either 2014 or 2015, but the guy wouldn't get off the stool, and then the ref kept coming over.
It was Yoel Romero.
Okay. Tell me what happened in that, because we were all confused, and there wasn't any volume in the thing.
Me too.
And we were all screaming our faces off, but everybody said later on that that could have changed your life as far as the way you would have risen in the rankings.
So Michael Bisping at that time, here, remember we talked about time and context being important. Michael Bisping was the current UFC champion. His last loss was me just beating the ever-loving shit out of him for 25 minutes.
After he had talked a considerable amount of trash leading up to that fight.
Yeah, and being a dirtbag.
Yeah.
So, like, even though I respect him as a fighter, like, as a person, we never really meshed well. Mm-hmm. And so he's the champion. I'm on this big win streak. I just came from Strikeforce. My last loss was for the title. I come and I win. I beat Hodger Gracie, you know, beat him up on the ground, arguably the best grappler on the planet. I destroy him in a grappling fight on the ground in my UFC debut. Then I win and I win, and then I go to fight Yoel Romero. And Yoel Romero was number three or number two, and I was number three ranked in the world. Mm-hmm. And Michael Bisping's the champion. If I beat Yoel Romero, I'm fighting for the world title. I'm on a win streak. I'm fighting the number two contender. And
who's the guy you've beaten relatively recently?
Yeah. And Yoel is a monster at this moment. He hasn't faced opposition in the UFC. And I go, we have a competitive first round. And then the second round, I start pouring it on. And I start hurting him. And I start landing punches. And then I land a series of big punches that put him out at 4:59, and John McCarthy comes and grabs and pulls me off. So I'm celebrating that I just won. And I find out that he got saved by the bell. So they put him on the stool, and I'm like, all right, here we go. I'm gonna fucking murder this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm just chomping at the bit. With that same kind of like singular focus where Manson and every single serial killer from history's past comes in and stands there with machetes and blowtorches. And I'm like, I get to murder all of them, and then I get to destroy you. Well, like, that was the focus.
Right.
And so the bell starts, and I walk out to the center of the ring like, fuck to the yeah, here we go.
Yep.
And like, I'm punching my ticket to the UFC, title. I'm a middleweight champion. I'm going to just, like, I'm already thinking, salivating at the mouth about how to destroy Michael Bisping and how many different ways I'm going to do it. And I have one thing stand in my way, is Yoel Romero. Bell sounds. I'm there. And John McCarthy's like, no, no, go back. So I'm like, well, this is odd. I've been fighting for 15 years. I'm not seeing this before. So I go back. The way that the rules read in the Nevada Athletic Commission is at 10 seconds after the bell, if somebody doesn't answer the bell, that's the end of the fight. So 10 seconds passes. And I'm like, all right. So I walk back out there. And John McCarthy's like, no, go back. So I go back, and I'm like, that's it, boys. You know, like, party's here.
Yeah.
Mouthpieces come out. I point at Dana White. I'm like, bitch, you're going to have to pay me. I just knocked out your number two dude on the planet. And you know I'm the next UFC champion. Michael Bisping's mine. I already want his name tattooed and a line through his, like, crossed through my chest. I would not put Michael Bisping's name on my chest.
Yeah, probably.
This is a metaphor. And about 30 seconds later, John tells me to come back and fight. And I'm just like, gone.
Anybody that's been in combat will understand what he's talking about.
Adrenaline dumps.
There's something called a lull, right? Combat lull. And your adrenaline spikes, and then there's a fucking break in the shooting for a while. Maybe it's fucking 5 minutes. Maybe it's 3 hours.
Then people die.
But you feel like you're fucking, you can't, it's almost like you're paralyzed. You're just like, you get depressed. You can't move. It sucks.
Yeah.
Not a great time to be fighting, I guess.
No, and it was one of those moments where there was, everyone was booing, screaming, I mean, throwing shit.
So they currently call it Stoolgate to this day, and arguably it's like the biggest mess up of the UFC procedures.
Because it would have changed the whole diet. I mean, you probably would have been champion.
My next fight's Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
Who here thinks that Michael Bisping had a chance at any point in fighting me?
Yeah. Well,
there's evidence to the contrary,
I guess. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It was one of those moments, though, where there was no volume. It was so loud in there. And I never got to hear it from you personally. I was just in a restaurant full of 1,000 people going nuts. And I was like, man, I wonder what you thought of that. And if you ever think back to that moment of like, fuck, I could have been champion. And what how differently your life would have been?
Yeah, this is like I have to be intentional in like a Jocko Willink extreme ownership way where everything that happened in there was my fault. Like, he was hurt. I should have just stayed present. You know, I should have just looked at him with that same focus. And when he finally did get off that stool, 45 seconds later, whatever it was, 38 seconds, mm-hmm. You know, they put too much Vaseline on. They spilled the bucket. They used every cheat trick
every
in the
trick
book.
In the book, yeah.
You know, and John McCarthy got played, and he was doing the language thing where he's like, I'm a communist Cuban. I don't really know how to speak. And right now, Yoel's fighting for Cuba's freedom. So I'm like, hey, bro, you cheated, but we got you. Keep doing your thing. So I'm just going to say, like, that was my fault. I should have just stayed there. I should have stayed in that moment. I should have gone out there and tore his face off and punched my ticket to the UFC title. And yeah, I regret not being better here, you know?
Yeah. Was your father there at that match?
No, he wasn't allowed to go to my fights.
Really?
Yeah.
Why not? Is that your call or his?
That's my call.
He's getting ready to grab the microphone and the camera. Give him the microphone and the camera.
Yeah, this is it. Thanks for bringing up a point of contention between us for the past 20 years. Go on, Dad.
Go ahead. Yeah. What was your thought of that night, and why weren't you allowed to go see his fights? Was that his choice or yours?
That was his.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. He's working, and I'm not allowed to go to work. His work.
And yeah. Did I go there and, like, you know, steal coke from Pablo Escobar when my dad was working?
Well, you did. You did.
No, I got, like, a license plate number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he lost the fight, and I was present. Family was present.
Mm. Okay.
And so family got blamed for his loss. So it...
And then I went on from that point on to not lose a fight for 10 years. Yeah. So,
So you made the right call.
I don't know. Yeah,
but I went nuts at home. I mean, my wife would be in the kitchen. I'd be in front of the TV telling everyone else in the room to shut up. But yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah, because you always wonder, right? The Olympics are on right now, and they're cutting back and forth between families in the United States, obviously due to COVID and everything else. But there is families that stay behind for one reason or another. You always wonder with a world championship athlete what it is. And so it was definitely Tim.
Yes.
Did you see that 17-year-old girl win the breaststroke 100 this morning?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the video of her high school? So they filled the gymnasium up with everybody from her high school.
Yeah.
And they went, chairs were flying. I was like, you could only see, like, granulated video, but there were, like, chairs flying through the air. They're like, kids flipping. I was like, did that kid just, like, jump? Yeah. Or did somebody launch that child into the air? It was so awesome. I'm actually in the middle of, I was writing a post. That I'm going to post as soon as we get off this, of all the American athletes. We're talking so much about people turning their back on the flag and people, like, you know, taking the, like, Mike, why aren't we talking about, like, the lieutenant that just won a gold and she's standing,
shooting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, at shooting, and, like, this beautiful 17-year-old teenager that's draping herself in the American flag. And I just started searching, and you, like, on Google Chrome, when you look at one photo, they find other photos that are similar.
Yeah.
So I just, like, started doing that with photo after photo to find all the Tokyo Olympians that are just oozing with American pride. And I was like, let's focus on how they're doing it, and let's not worry about the bad. Let's just focus on the good. And there were hundreds and hundreds of these athletes that are just, like, the beautiful thing that is the American competitive spirit, and every single one of them embody it. And I was like, yes. Yeah, I might be mad at the Olympics for other stuff, but yeah, these guys are crushing it. It's our girls.
It
mostly.
Is great. Yeah. Yeah, it's so, speaking of that, we were in Vegas for the opening weekend of Big Three, the basketball thing. One of the people we interviewed was Lisa Leslie, right? Her husband is an Air Force, former Air Force pilot, so on and so forth. We were just talking. She's like the Kobe Bryant of female basketball, right? So, like, what's the proudest moment of your life? And she said it was representing her country, which is not a very popular point of view from basketball, I guess, these days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It was interesting to hear that, right, from a person of that level of greatness. Maybe that affords you the ability to tell people to go fuck themselves a little bit. You know what I mean? Okay, yeah. Like, who's going to challenge Lisa Leslie?
Yeah, no one. And that's why I get caught up in the magic of the Olympics every night, where there is that possibility that you're going to see that exact moment that you were describing, and it's going to change someone's life. And somebody like you obviously knows the work ethic and the sacrifice that you have to just for that one moment.
Yeah.
And if you fuck it up, it's like Simone Biles today, where it's just like, oh, great, great. What's wrong with her? What happened? Everything else, mental health.
What's wrong with her is she's got a fucking a wheelbarrow full of gold medals at home. Just relax, everybody. Yeah. Jesus Christ. You can't do it forever. Just relax.
Yeah. But there is that possibility that it's going to be that like the swimmer the other night was going against Ledecky, the Australian coach. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he was dry humping the thing after.
I loved it.
So do I.
I was freaking out. I was like, I don't know who that guy is, but that is.
But I love him.
I want that as my coach. I want that amount of emotion and commitment and passion and pride in my success and my failure. Because had it been a loss, it would have been tears and like absolute deflating of that person's soul, that coach's soul. Like she was so, or he was so connected.
Yeah.
Like, God is gorgeous.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I want to see Pete Weber as a coach of something in the Olympics.
PDW, greatest athlete of all time.
Whoever you think you are.
I am. Best line in sports history.
What it means, but it means something for sure.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Now is the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Now, Tim has been on the show numerous times, so we're going to give it to you and let you give that away today. So who is somebody that has helped or inspired you become the person you are, or maybe helps you want to open up a school?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, probably a lot of people get on here and say their mom, but honestly, that's it for me. You know, she is the person that I can call about anything. She's my biggest cheerleader. If she was into dry humping, she totally would have done that at like every sporting event of mine as a kid. You know, my dad and my mom showed up for me at every sporting event, at every game, whenever I tried something new. And that's who you need, right? Someone in your corner that says, wow, go get it. You can do this.
Yeah.
You know? And whether it was, you know, sports or education or a career or having kids or getting married, you know, they were always, you got this.
That's awesome.
That's my number one. My dad says to me all the time, you got this.
Well,
I never worry about you.
That's awesome. Since Tim's dad is here.
Yeah.
And you got to choose Tim, mom or dad. Who was it?
They were the perfect balance of,
very diplomatic
yin and yang. You know, like tearing my dad's heart out, telling him not to go to my fights. And then, you know, my mom being probably the most violent out of all of us. You know, but she's a piano teacher, marriage counseling, church elder. And then there's like, so the contrast and the balance is there.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Last question for you, Tim. Where are you at on the book? I know you guys are doing a biography about your life. I am amped for this to come out because there is so many stories that nobody knows about your life that would shock and awe their minds. I can't wait for your book to come out. Where are you guys at in the stages of that?
Nick and I think we're about 60% solution. We are now getting our chapters back from the publisher and Simon Schuster. And they have so few notes. We're killing it.
Yeah.
And so I think we're 6 chapters through. You know, we have 4 or 5 more to go.
Yeah.
But and then it's like
it's got to go to the DOD.
Yeah.
DOD is the issue.
Oof.
Yeah, but it's not because I'm old. Like a lot of those.
Well, Matt had issues with the DOD.
18 months. Yeah,
but the content of his book wasn't necessarily a recruitment tool. I mean, at least according to them, I think it was.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and like you know, we said this on the last show too. And I'll follow up on that as well, because there was some people in the Special Forces community gotten on you for posting on Instagram, being very vocal on social media about everything you're doing. Oh, he's ruining everything else. There's a bunch of higher-ups that hit up Dan and I when they, because we'd leave the studio open. They come in all the time. They were like, man, if you see Tim Kennedy, tell him, dude, he's probably the biggest fucking recruiting tool we have. And if it weren't for him and his social media and posting all this stuff.
Yeah, the SEAC told us that. The senior listed person in the entire military told us that you were a recruitment tool.
Live on air.
Pretty sure that makes it true.
Yes.
Yeah. I was with the chief of SOCOM, so the CSM, they now call chiefs when they're a CCSM. And, you know, it was the same. It's like, I know I'm not perfect, and I try to toe the line, and I try to be supportive of everything that we do as a regiment, but I'm also going to be like, I can't change who I am, and I can't change the perspectives or beliefs that I have. And I'm going to be vocal about those things. And like, if I get a little bit of hate from some very outspoken guys, it's, I think they just don't understand what I'm trying to do and see the bigger picture. And, go talk to Troxel or go talk to the chief from SOCOM, like, or my colonel boss right now that is supportive in every way.
Yeah, they were on the show, and I just wanted to give you
a
heads up for that, because, dude,
nothing hurts worse than my colleagues attacking me.
I can imagine.
Well, here's some.
Just know that the highest people are like, dude, Tim is doing the right thing.
Well, also, this person in the chat, Lily Bloxham, apparently is joining the military because of you. So that's a good
Lily.
Good
go feedback. Make the green grass grow. Yeah. You hear me?
It's blood that does that. By the way,
blood, blood, so. Blood makes the green grass grow.
Tell everybody where they can find your school and help out.
Absolutely. So you can find us on www.apogeecedarpark.com. On there, you'll find lots of information about the school, how you can apply, how you can donate, how you can be a part of what we're doing, how you can have a career with us.
Fantastic.
Our three guides?
Yeah. You want to talk about? You want me to talk
just
about?
Just name drop them because they're so freaking rad.
Oh, they're amazing.
Just take two sentences about each of them.
Like, Kayla Wagner.
Oh my God.
Right. So Kayla has been involved in private and public school for a long time. You can tell she loves what she does. She's a solo wilderness certified survivalist. Loves to be outdoors. Ashley Cartwright. She's got several businesses. She's got 4 kids of her own.
She's jacked.
Jacked. Yeah, she'll be a part of your 4 pillars program.
Yeah.
We've got Alan Perez. He's bilingual Spanish and Italian, background in psychology, rookie teacher of the year. I mean, we had hundreds and hundreds of applicants. It's very exciting.
And one would have to imagine.
Like best.
Yeah, one would have to imagine, like, there's so many teachers that are fed up with what's going on at traditional schools that they're probably hitting you up being like, hey, can I come and teach here? Because this sounds like it would be challenging and exciting.
They don't get into it for the money.
No one gets into education for the money unless
you're out of your mind. Well, people at the top level do. The administrative costs have gone up 2,000% over the last 25 years, while teacher salaries have gone up about 27%. So off the soapbox there. Anyways, no reasonable person gets into education for the money. They get into it because they care about teaching kids.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And they're frustrated. They're frustrated that the way that they want to teach or what they feel like is important isn't allowed, you know? And they're teaching to the test all the time. So it's really exciting to see that people are already doing this, and now we're just giving them a place to come in.
Well, look, I think it's amazing. I think we need more schools like this in the U.S., and it's great what you're doing because it's an uphill climb that I'm sure no one but the two of you guys know what's going on behind the scenes, and it is, I'm sure, ruthless every single day.
You got to put
and
on
I don't know how stress level-wise you guys get through it. Because I'm sure there is about 80 calls every single day behind the scenes for lawyers and everything else.
Yeah, they're like 5 weeks out and stress is kind of six weeks out.
6 weeks out. Yeah.
Tim's like Captain America ripping logs in half out in front of his house to relieve stress and shit. I get it.
Yeah. No, I understand. The school system's brutal, my man. You guys are doing God's work. We appreciate you being here. I always say every time Tim Kennedy is on the show, we are better humans for getting to sit and chat with him for his small amount of time. And look, we've offered to back up the truck for Tim to have his own show on the network. He's a busy fucking dude. When you're retired, have an open chair on any single set in here. Okay. And your father is a wonderful man. It was
Can
a pleasure
I say one
meeting
thing
him today.
Leave Ross?
Absolutely.
Tim, you want to come back and talk some MMA ever? Talk about cutting weight, talking about the bath, talking about all the advances we're having in the sport?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Come do a show with Chuck. Yeah. Chuck will do a massive event. What's the next biggest card coming up?
There's a bunch of them. The Uriah Hall's next.
Well, end of September, there's that fight.
Houston.
Yeah.
Derek
Lewis is fighting in Houston, I think, in 2 weeks.
Yeah, Ciryl Gane, yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the one that Nate Diaz is fighting on. Who is he fighting? I can't remember who he's fighting.
You mean Nick? Yeah. Nick's fighting Robbie Lawler.
Nick's fighting Robbie Lawler. And then the headline of that is Volkanovski fighting for the title, right?
Yeah.
Tim, just out of curiosity, when was the last time Nick fought?
Nick Palmisano?
No, Nick Diaz.
Nick Diaz. Oh, it's been a long time.
2013,
right?
Yeah.
Just saying, you could get back in. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, he's fighting Robbie Lawler, and Robbie, that was a bloodbath. Yeah. You want to watch a bloodbath? Watch Robbie Lawler and I.
Good Lord.
When I said that, by the way, your dad put his headphones back on. He wants you to get back in there. He wants you back in. Let dad come and see one more match.
We're going to sneak his dad into the fight without Tim knowing.
Oh, man.
Let dad see one more fight in person. That's all he wants.
It was not only did he fight Robbie Lawler, but in his amateur time, he did a pancreas with the Diaz brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Oh, I did not see that. Is that videotaped anywhere?
That's way more stuff.
Wow. Yeah. Let him back in.
Yeah.
Hashtag let Tim Kennedy back in the UFC.
Well, I don't think anybody's stopping him, except for his own goddamn schedule.
Yeah.
Well. Would you do some grappling still, Tim?
Yeah.
Just no striking?
Yeah. I just got back to rolling yesterday. It was about the first time that I did a live roll in since surgery, which was 10 weeks ago. And I think I'll be competition ready in maybe another 2 weeks.
So for everyone out there listening, you have missed your opportunity to get Tim while he's hurt. He is now back and ready for action.
Yes.
We're going to start a website that monitors Tim's health. And when it gets below a certain level, there's just going to be people attacking him in public.
Dude, all my, it's like in rehab, like my deadlift got better. My row time got better. My ski time got better. Like my 500 calorie race on the Airdyne got better. Like the only thing I can do is grapple and run. And so
it's because you give your body a break, then you rebuild from scratch with those stabilizer muscles.
Yeah, smart.
And then you're gonna throw it all away and jump out of a plane tomorrow.
We talked to John Briggs about this with the Tommy John surgery that pitchers get. They think that the prevailing wisdom used to be that it's making them throw harder than it's repairing all of the 20 years of damage they've done.
Yeah.
Take some time off. I've been taking time off since November of 2018. I feel great.
Yeah, you look great. I tried to force you into a workout before I come on here. No. Did you know that, Ross?
Oh, yeah. I told him.
I was like, hey, I'll come on, but.
Yeah. And he was like, dude, I haven't worked out in 4 years.
That's why I had to sacrifice. Well, I said that, and he was like, well, now is a good time to start. I'm like,
lamb to the slaughter.
I'm like, let me do this. I'll give you Giorgio. You can do whatever you want to him.
Thicker Giorgio. I like it.
I know.
Oh, man. Thanks,
I know.
Guys.
The two C's. Thanks for being on. Check out Apogee, cedarpark.com. So you can find out about the school and not only how to donate as well. There's also a donate button on there. Tim, thank you guys so much for being here today.
Love you guys. Don't change.
Greatly appreciate it. So we know you're a busy, busy man, and good luck with the school.
Yeah.
For D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.